You don't have to take my word for it when I say that the use of the notwithstanding clause is, well, quite concerning when it comes to limiting the size of Toronto City Council. The Ontario Civil Liberties Association has their concerns as well. Denis Rancourt is one of their researchers, joins us on the phone lines right now to discuss that this morning. Dr. Rancourt, thank you very much for the time on the program this morning. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Tell me about your concerns surrounding the use of the notwithstanding clause with Bill 5 here. Look, the concerns about Bill 5 are well documented, which is the timing, which is the fact that this was done, obviously, in the midst of an election. They didn't wait until the next election cycle, all those sorts of things. But your concerns about the use of the notwithstanding clause to essentially keep Bill 5 alive.
Yeah, my concern is not so much that it's being used. I'm going back a step back, and I'm asking, does the ruling, I mean, it's very unusual for a judicial ruling to strike down a statute that's been put through by the legislature. That's a very unusual thing. It's a very big interference, and that interference is also occurring in the middle of this election period, and it is itself an interference. So the first question has to be, is the ruling correct? Does it make sense? And when we studied the ruling, we found that it didn't make sense. It's a nonsense ruling. It's an activist ruling, and because the basis of the ruling is that the freedom of expression rights of the candidates, for example, and then of the voters, were violated by implementing this bill. Well, we can't see it. We can't see by what mechanism and how and which expression was impeded or prevented by restructuring the regions in this way. We just don't see it.
And I don't disagree with you from the perspective of, and I've said this regularly on the show, if the number of city councillors in Toronto is 25 or 44 or 47, I don't understand how that is necessarily a charter thing. I think that the timing is obviously a bit suspicious, but to me, the solution here could or should have been just appeal this, because legal experts that I've talked to, and I'll ask whether you agree, but if the Ford government had just filed an appeal and didn't use a notwithstanding clause, I think they would have won. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah, they'll win the appeal. The ruling is nonsensical. The judge is waving his arms and saying that a fundamental charter right has been violated without an iota of evidence to that effect. The judge had a duty to spell out how this law violates a charter right and didn't in any way. So it's a really bad ruling. And faced with a really bad ruling that itself disrupts the process, because the Bill 5 had already been actuated, it was in place, and so now you're creating even more uncertainty. I think that, you know, you could argue that the premier had a duty to bring in the notwithstanding clause in order to correct this judicial interference, which was displaced and incorrect. So that's what I think.
Yeah, interesting you mentioned the duty to use a notwithstanding clause. I just, and again, you'd know more about how the legal system works than I would, but I would think that just the appeal by itself would have been enough, because they should have been able to find a way to expedite the appeal. Is that, would they have been leaving?
No, you can't expedite an appeal at the Ontario Court of Appeal. Not in the middle, not weeks from an election.
Fair
like
enough.
This, you know, there's no way you could do that. And, you know, you can't rush a constitutional appeal or a constitutional trial, for that matter. I mean, the rushed nature of this itself was improper, I think. So it was a judicial interference that was disproportionate, that was incorrect, that was palpably an activist ruling. What do you do in a case like that? What does the premier do when he legitimately passes a statute that he has the full authority and to do, legally speaking, and a judge comes in and says, I'm going to throw it out, and I'm not going to even consider how you're going to adjust to my throwing it out, which he had a duty to do. He just said, well, I'm just going to presume that the city can adjust to this quickly enough, and I'm just going to throw it out. What do you do when a judge disrupts the government process in this way? Well, this is one of the things that you can do. And I think that this is precisely a time when you can do it.
Yeah, I certainly would suspect that that's something that would be within the grounds of the use of the notwithstanding clause. So let me ask you this then. Is it reasonable to say that, you know, the timing of this thing was somewhat suspect, but not a violation of anyone's charter rights? Is that a reasonable way to look at Bill 5?
Well, I don't know how suspect it is. I mean, the government comes in, he wants this thing to be effective immediately. Otherwise, you're stuck with 5 years that the government feels would not be a good situation. So he has the power and the obligation to do to push what he thinks is best for the province immediately and quickly. He does it. And I don't see a charter violation here. I mean, I think the judge, there were other arguments, and the judge could have done things differently. Mm-hmm. But what the judge did is to claim that there was a violation of freedom of expression. Well, where is it? Which candidate was not permitted to say what? And which voter had their freedom of expression violated? You know, we're not prevented from voting. All the candidates can still run. Everything was already in place. Why did the judge do this?
The angle about Doug Ford essentially naming off councillors in Toronto who he doesn't particularly like, and he says, well, these people are worried about their jobs. Is that a political thing, or does that not really matter from the legal perspective?
That's just
here?
Political talk. It's neither here nor there.
They say it's not what happens to you that matters. It's how you react. Life gave me Parkinson's, and my reaction? Let's do a podcast about my degenerative brain disorder. Hi, I'm Larry Gifford, and I invite you to listen and subscribe to When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
I was astounded.
Makes you think about, you know, what's really important.
This crosswalk just turned zero, and I'm halfway through. Uh-oh.
Try everything.
I feel like I've been through 12.
I think I'll be dead before I'm done.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or at applepodcasts.com/CuriousCast.
The other thing that I criticize when the judge is ruling, and you, obviously you've read more of these rulings than I have, but when I see the judge write crickets as one of the paragraphs, that led me to believe that, hey, maybe something's a little bit of a miss here.
Yeah, that's right. And if you go into the ruling and you see where he says crickets, he's not right to say that. I mean, the province had provided evidence regarding the Section 1 argument, and these are the typical arguments that a government would provide. So there were no crickets. But the judge was just all over the map in this ruling. He was not following the Oaks recipe for a constitutional challenge to a statute. He was mixing the justification of violating a right with whether or not the right was violated. In other words, there's the first thing you have to do when you're a judge listening to one of these cases is ask yourself the threshold question, was a fundamental charter right violated, yes or no? We need to get to that before we even consider if that violation can be justified in a free and democratic society. We have to ask, was such a right violated? How exactly? And what is the specific, case-specific evidence that this right was violated in this case? The judge didn't do that. It's a very bad ruling, and I think that the public should be concerned that a judge can make such a bad ruling, that a judge can basically just pull things out of his hat, do whatever, not follow any of the jurisprudence on how you do this, and just give an opinion as though it were evidence. I mean, this to me is the violation, is the judicial interference and how sloppy it is. I mean, that is what we need to be concerned about.
Isn't that why we have appeals courts, though?
No. Appeal courts are supposed to look at fine questions of law, that whether or not they were correct or not. The appeal court shouldn't have to discipline judges because the rulings are so off that they're not doing anything correctly and they're being activist judges. The appeal court does do that occasionally, but shouldn't have to. The appeal court is, you shouldn't be wasting the appeal court's time with activist judgments. You know, I mean, we should be really concerned that a judge at this level can do this kind of thing. I think that's where the debate should have been. I think that's the gaping hole that the media didn't address, is let's look at the judgment. Let's look at the arguments of the judge, and let's see if they make any sense. Anybody can understand this. We all know what freedom of expression is, and this judge is saying it was violated. Well, okay, what was the expression that was violated? What was the thing that you wanted to say that you couldn't say? And how is it that that was impeded? explain it to me. You know, spell it out in your ruling. That's what you have to do. And it wasn't done.
Yeah, I know. I certainly get why. I get, like I said, I was critical of the ruling myself. I still think that, this kind of is a political line that got crossed here, but I suppose that's more of a political question than a legal question as far as...
Well, there's also the other thing that the media is not discussing very much is the question of gerrymandering. I mean, clearly, Doug Ford is going back to federal ridings that were designed, that were gerrymandered by the Harper government in 2013. Okay, well, gerrymandering, if you're concerned about democracy, which the judge says he is, gerrymandering is a serious violation of democracy. There should be protections in place, ethics rules, watchdogs that ensure that this can't be done. But every government in power has perfected this gerrymandering thing. So we're stuck with that. Now, if we want to talk about democracy and what's right and what's wrong in terms of having the most fair democracy, we should be talking about gerrymandering, violating ethics, all these questions, rather than going on and on about this notwithstanding clause in a case where the judge's ruling was clearly bad and palpably an activist ruling.
Well, yeah, and I don't disagree about the ruling. I think that the way that the Ford government handled it, maybe not necessarily the best, but I suppose reasonable people can disagree on that. Last thing I want to ask you before we go, you mentioned that there was obviously some concern here surrounding, you know, gerrymandering and the ridings. I certainly grant that the number of wards in Toronto and the boundaries of the wards were not randomly or arbitrarily come up with. It's pretty clearly that they fall on the lines of the provincial and federal boundaries as well, but just about every other city in the country has more ward councillors than they do members of parliament or members of provincial parliament. So is that not a little bit strange, that portion of it?
No, I mean, it's not about the absolute numbers. It's about whether or not, in a particular case, there was significant gerrymandering. I mean, if you're going to ask the fundamental question of justice in the interest of democracy, you have to ask, okay, when the city redraws its boundaries, Is it doing this for special interests and for political purposes? And are the committees that study this, are they truly objective or not? You know, you have to always be thinking about the possibility of gerrymandering and protecting against it. So there, you can argue that the city's 47 ridings are the result to some degree of gerrymandering. You can certainly make the point that the 2013 Harper redesign was gerrymandering. But the question is gerrymandering, not the number of ridings, but is it fair? Is it how did it come about? And are governments going to be fixing the situation in the cases where it needs fixing? So that on that question of the size of the ridings, I think that's how I would answer it. You know, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association, which I'm a researcher with, is very concerned about the freedom of expression question. We think that if a judge is going to wave his hands and say that right has been violated in a case where it hasn't, it minimizes that right. You know, it trivializes it. And so we want to protect against that because there are many cases where freedom of expression really is violated and is not protected by the courts. So here you've got a case where the judge is saying it's violated when it's not, and then you've got all these other cases where it's clearly violated and the judge condone it. So that's why the Ontario Civil Liberties Association is, you know, very concerned about this. Whenever you talk about freedom of expression, you have to have that hat of being a principled examiner of whether or not it was violated. You have to wear that hat if you're going to do it properly. And so that's why we felt we had to make a statement in this case.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the program and talking about the statement with me today, Dr. Rancour. Thank you very much for the time.
It's my pleasure.
All right. That's Dr. Denis Rancour, who's with the Ontario Civil Liberties Association. He's a researcher there. My reaction to what he was just saying on the other side of the break, it's Global News Radio 980 CFPL.